A look at intraosseous access with infusion nurse Cora Vizcarra. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. If you haven't already done so, make sure you head over and check out nursingshow.com for all of the links to everything mentioned in this and every other episode. And of course, for additional information, articles, and of course, sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter, all available over at nursingshow.com. I love to hear from all of the listeners, so make sure you are over there following up on the articles and checking back in with me. You can leave a comment right over there on the site. You can also catch up with me by sending me an email. Send those emails in to nursingshow@gmail.com. You can also catch up with me on Twitter and Facebook. I'm under the handle PodMedic, PodMedic. So facebook.com/podmedic and twitter.com/podmedic. And of course, don't forget the Nursing Show fan page over on Facebook. You can find that over at facebook.com/nursingshow. Just click the like button right there at the top of the page and become a fan of The Nursing Show over on Facebook. There's a lot of different ways you can keep in touch with me, and I do make an effort to respond back to every single email and contact I get. It might take me a couple of days, but I will get back to you. So make sure you follow up with comments, suggestions, questions, and yes, most importantly, corrections. I'm going to make mistakes, folks, and it's incumbent upon you as a member of the Nursing Show community to help keep me straight and make sure I share the correct information with the Nursing Show listeners and viewers here. Of course, there are viewers now. If you haven't noticed over the last few months, we've added a video section to the site, nursingshow.tv, and you can find links to this video. All the episodes are now recorded simultaneously in video, so you can watch the show. And of course, if you have something like a Roku box, and hopefully soon the boxy set-top box devices that hook up to your living room TV and connect you to internet video programming, you'll be able to find this show and others in the medical space on the ProMed Network channel. So you can find out more about that and more information about the great shows over at the ProMed Network at promednetwork.com. Time to jump into the segment with Cora Vizcarra right now. And Cora was gracious enough to come on and talk about intraosseous access. Now, a lot of you in the nursing realm may not know a whole lot about intraosseous access, but with new tools that make it easier and less painful to obtain access, vascular access essentially, via the intraosseous route, we may see this more commonly used in non-critical care settings. And so Cora was gracious enough to come on and talk a little bit about intraosseous access with me. Now, this was an audio-only call, so those of you watching the video, I actually put together a quick PowerPoint to cover the points that we're discussing and keep the video flowing here. But you'll be able to check out that segment if you're watching the video portion. And Cora, if you haven't heard of Cora before, we've had her here on the show. She's a past president of the Infusion Nursing Society. She's the author of infusionnurse.org, a blog that has great information on IV access, infusion nursing, and general patient care information regarding IVs and vascular access, PICC lines, and all kinds of things. So you can find out more by heading over to infusionnurse.org. And I want to thank Cora for helping out with this segment. And of course, those of you who listen to the Insights in Nursing panel show every week will probably recognize her as well. She's been a regular guest over there. So that's it. Let's head on in and jump into this segment with Cora Vizcarra from infusionnurse.org. Hi, this is Jamie Davis, and we're here with a really great interview opportunity. I had an opportunity to sit down recently and speak with Cora Vizcarra. Cora is a nurse, works with MCV and Associates. They consult and train people for vascular access and infusion therapy. She's also a past president of the Infusion Nurses Society. And I was talking with Cora recently, and some of you may listen to the Insights in Nursing program and know that she's been a panelist on that show before. And Cora and I have been touching base about possibly having her on to talk a little bit about intraosseous access.
Now, I'm going to be putting this on a couple of different shows because I think it's an interesting discussion for a variety of medical professionals. So for those of you listening to this from an EMS background, you probably know what we're talking about. Intraosseous access is often considered, the emergency vascular access point of preference in emergency cardiac arrest settings and other similar emergent settings. But what about where is IO going in the rest of the hospital setting and other patient care arenas? And Cora is going to come on and talk a little bit about that because of some of the advances in placing IOs. And that's what we're going to be talking about. When we say intraosseous access, we call them IOs. So just I'm not sitting here being one of the seven dwarfs going IO, IO.
or intake and output.
Intake and output. If for those of you that are nurses, you'll get that one. But Cora, welcome to the show, or welcome back to the show. I've had you on several different times now.
Yes, thank you, Jamie. Such an honor, and always a delight to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about infusion nursing and the use of intraosseous access. Probably been a staple in the pre-hospital setting in emergency medical services, but not something that's used commonly in many hospitals. And yet that seems to be changing. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
That's correct, Jamie. We know intraosseous for several decades. It has been used as a route for vascular access in emergency settings. And even to some extent within the emergency room, it has been used to establish vascular access and for patients requiring emergency care. Now, very recently, probably in the last 5 years or so, IO has expanded into the acute care settings, both using them both in emergent and non-emergent situations. And the reason is primarily because vascular access can be attained quickly by the IO route. So, for nurses, just like myself, I am an infusion nurse. And even though we always pride ourselves in knowing that somehow we're going to get a line, and even the most acutely ill patient, there's still some situations where even though you can get a line, what is very important is time. When you have a patient that requires vascular access almost immediately or very soon, then you finding one, I think the IO route really can serve as a bridge or as we call it, an alternate access. Sometimes when you have an emergency or even patient that requires just, rapid response, for you to put in a line, such as a peripheral IV line, it's going to take a while. Looking for a vein, especially if their veins have collapsed or their circulatory system is collapsed, or even setting up for a PICC insertion or even for a central line. And we know that there's a whole lot of checklists that we have to do in order to put in a central line, so that takes time as well. But for putting an intraosseous access, it's very simple, it's very quick, and you can establish a vascular access and treat the patient very rapidly. So the reason is simply, it is a viable alternative in situations where you cannot put a central vascular access or a central line, or it's very difficult to find a peripheral access. So IO comes definitely within, as you said earlier, with the newer technology. With the drill and all that, IO access has become much, much convenient and easier.
And what about medications? Are there a lot of limitations on which medications can be administered via this route, or is it pretty open?
Actually, there are no limitations as far as any what medications. Typically, most of the medications that you can give intravenously can also be given through IOs. And again, some of them like emergency medications you can use to resuscitate patients, fluids, anticonvulsants, or even narcotic antagonists can, be given intraosseous. So potentially truly anything that you can give via an IV access can be given by intraosseous route as well. So there's a lot of studies that have shown that the absorption is just as good, if not better, for intraosseous access.
Now, we talked a little bit, we mentioned briefly the new technologies and things that are out there, and you mentioned the drill. Just for people that aren't familiar with this, I mean, we are actually pushing a needle into the bone to access the marrow space, and then infusing in that way. This, of course, you know, first of all, sounds painful, sounds like it's requires a lot of work. And you mentioned there are devices out there that make that a lot easier. I mean, heck, when I started years ago as a paramedic, we were basically hand cranking. You put it in, you know, you twisted your hand back and forth to try to get this, which is one of the reasons we never did it to anybody that was conscious. But this has changed.
That's correct. There's a lot of new technology now. Before, like you said, you know, they were using spinal needles and they were drilling it into the sternum. And for the most part, patients weren't complaining, obviously, because most of them, as you said, were unconscious or in a coma. And then, you know, the technology as well as the devices itself really has changed. Now there's a lot more battery-powered, you know, spring-loaded, impact-driven devices that are available, for people to use. You know, like some examples would be the Fast One, and you know, these are the ones. It's impact-driven, and then some of the other ones that might be familiar to people are the Big or the bone injection gun, which is both used in adult and pediatric. And then, you know, we have, of course, the drill, which is the EZ-IO. And again, that one is just very simple. It's a hand drill, almost like, you know, something that you would use to drill, you know, screw into a wall, and it's battery powered, but it has a very specially designed needle tip, and can be used for intraosseous. So most of them are actually really very easy. You still have to be trained and to know how to use it, and the flow rates are almost equivalent to that of a peripheral IV. There's fewer complications and obviously very low infection rate. And one thing that's very important is that, you know, you are actually drilling it into the intraosseous space within the bone marrow. And in there's a thick network of fibrin. And so in order to get good maximum flow, then you need to get into that fibrin, the mesh, the thick fibrin network, and after you get in there, then you know you could infuse pretty much at a very good rate, enough that you can resuscitate a patient.
So when we talk about you know, the fact that these new devices are out there, and I'm very familiar with the EZ-IO, the drill. I'm not as familiar with some of the other devices, although I've seen them either video of them being used or seen them used in person. But I know that one of the things that's changed significantly is the fact that you have access literally within seconds. I mean, you cleanse your area and then you take the drill and you're in. And I mean, it's almost as quickly as I just said it. I mean, literally, you squeeze the trigger, you apply it, you're in. And then it's just a question of making sure you've got a patent line.
That's exactly right. If it's the prep for the intraosseous, depending on, you know, where you put it, it's either in the proximal humerus, proximal tibia, or distal tibia. There's certain devices that are only approved for the sternum or not approved for the sternum. For example, the EZ-IO, they are FDA approved for use in the proximal humerus, proximal tibia, and distal tibia. And then the rest, you know, have those as well, plus the sternum. So it actually takes, you know, from including the prep, which is very simple prep, just like you would for a peripheral IV. And then you just use the drill, and it actually takes less than 1 minute, the time to insert. Compare that to the peripheral IV insertion, which would take about 10 minutes, depending on whether you can find a vein or not. And, you know, the failure rate also with a peripheral IV is a higher percentage in certain situations, patient conditions as well, about 10 to 30%. But this one, if you know exactly where the location of the bone is and you can drill it, you can get in less than a minute. So, you know, so it is truly, again, you know, 90% of the access is you can get in less than 10 minutes. So much, much quicker than an IV.
Yeah, you're not sitting there and you know, holding their arm up to the light and you know, having right. them all on their side and all the tricks we've tried over the years.
That's correct. And so, you know, not to say that everybody can, you know, use the ECIO drill instantly without any training, but you know, the key truly is to get trained so that you can find exactly where the landmarks are, especially if you're using, you know, the proximal humerus. It's very easy, and there's a way, you know, that you can get you can find landmarks, so you can find exactly where you can drill. And once you find that, then you know the drill comes in really easily, and you can establish a vascular access quickly. And same with the proximal tibia and the distal tibia as well. It's just that you need landmarks. You need to be trained in finding the landmarks. But it's, you know, once you get the landmarks in, you can easily get the device in quicker.
Now, how do patients tolerate? You know, we usually, like I said, my experience has always been with unconscious or patients who are coding. But, you know, you're talking about that this will be more useful for patients in a broader patient population. How do the conscious patients tolerate right. having an IO in place? Let's say it's implanted when they weren't conscious, maybe in a surgical setting, and now they're out. I mean, does it how is it? What's right. its lifespan in the hospital setting, and what right. is, how do patients tolerate it?
So patients, adult patients and pediatric patients that need, you know, vascular access in, you know, emergent and non-emergent situation, you know, can benefit from an IO. And it is actually, you know, so patients in pediatric ICU, labor and delivery, in the OR, rapid response teams or code teams, you know, this would apply to them, emergency department. And of course, you know, and to the infusion nurses or IV teams that are around, it is a sort of like an alternate access. And it's just really a bridge. So in the conscious patient, you know, a lot of them, you know, would complain of insertion pain, but it really depends on the device that you're using. Many patients and volunteers that, you know, during studies, they rate the pain upon insertion similar to the pain that you would experience having a large bore peripheral IV catheter put in. So, you know, without any, you know, anesthesia or local infiltration of lidocaine, for example. So if you were putting in an 18-gauge peripheral IV without any local anesthesia or local pain or infiltrating pain, then it would be the same amount of pain that they have reported for patients that are getting IO insertions. So it is, you know, so it's not that painful, but it, again, it has to do with some of the device that you're actually using. So that has something to do with that as well. So the other thing that they could do is they could also give them lidocaine, but most patients actually complain of the pain not during the insertion but during the infusion. Because the intraosseous space is a non-expandable cavity, then they would, you know, sometimes would experience pain. So it is advisable to infuse the lidocaine or during the infusion to alleviate the pain that the patient is experiencing. The recommendation for an IO, the dwell time for an intraosseous access is 24 hours. And again, it's really just considered to be a bridge. And what that is that, you know, it gives you enough time to determine what's the next best vascular access after you have bridged the patient to a more stable condition. So then you can, after that, determine whether you want a central line put in or some other sort of vascular access that the patient might benefit from. So you have to remove after 24 hours the IO access. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't put another IO access in a different bone in a different location. Certainly, you're welcome to do that, but not in the same location where you just removed the present IO device. So it is really just for 24 hours. And right now, there are, you know, no studies beyond that yet. I think they're continuing to evaluate that. And then as far as going back to the pain, you know, the recommendation is to consider giving 2% lidocaine without preservative for patient responsive to pain prior to flushing. And then otherwise, you know, again, you know, patients generally, you know, like I said, don't experience pain afterwards. And they don't experience pain also during removal. So it's not very painful, but most of the pain is related to the insertion pain, to the infusion pain, more so than it is insertion.
Cora, what about those patients that are that have maybe some sort of a bone disorder? Patients such as elderly females with osteoporosis. Is there a limitation on when and when we can and can't use IO access for certain patients?
There are. Of course, when you have a fracture to the targeted bone, where you were going to put the intraosseous access, that is a contraindication. Anytime that there's a past orthopedic procedure that was done to the limb where you're about to put, where you're targeting to put the IO access, that's also a contraindication. When you have put in an IO access in the past 24 hours in that bone, you can't, like I said earlier, reuse that. When there's infection at the insertion site, or of course, you know, when you are not able to locate the landmarks, or there's just excessive tissue around the shoulder or the ankle that you're not able to locate your landmark, that is also a contraindication. You know, if a patient has a surgical scar over a joint, or say that they have a titanium appliance like a knee replacement joint or ankle replacement within the joint itself, then you know they generally cannot be penetrated by the ECIO. So you can simply just use the other sites that are approved by the FDA for the ECIO. Those are, you know, just a few contraindications for that, but otherwise, you know, they, you know, pretty much, you know, you can use it for anything else. You know, for the most part, just again to infuse, infusion for alternate access for infusion. So the complications are, you know, very rare, but sometimes can happen. You can have some osteomyelitis that can occur. And although it's very rare, it's very low, and the incidence is truly very low. Now, extravasation is could occur as well, although, you know, again, it's something that is not, hasn't been studied very much yet, but it also depends as well at, with the design. It has to do with the design of the needle itself. You know, the ECIO, it's uniquely designed so that the tip cuts right into the bone rather than using force to enter the bone. This allows a minimal discomfort, of course, upon insertion. But it creates a hole in the cortex of the bone that is the same size as the needle, so it doesn't increase the risk of extravasation or enlargement. Or dislodgement. Unlike the other designs of some of the other IO access, where there's several needles at the tip, so it really just, you know, cores the bone and can increase the risk for extravasation. So if it's inserted very gently, there won't be any microfractures, and so the incidence of extravasation is much, much lower or eliminated to some degree.
Well, Cora, I want to thank you very much. And people want to find out more about this. You recently have an article that you've written about this that they can find.
Yes. It was published in the Journal of Infusion Nursing in the May-June 2010 issue, which is volume 33. And it's entitled Intraosseous Route as an Alternate Access for Infusion Therapy.
Great. Well, and I'll have a link and a complete reference to that in the show notes when this plays. And I just want to thank you again for being just a great resource for all of the listeners and viewers out there on what's going on in the infusion nursing and in generally in the infusion space.
Well, thank you. I hope I could help. Anytime you have a question or need anything, let me know.
I will.
And that's going to wrap up this week's episode here of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week, and make sure that you head over and follow up on the additional resource links I provide for you over in the show notes for this episode. There's a show notes link right at the top of the page. Go ahead and click that link and you'll find all of the episodes listed there. Most recent episode will be listed first, and you can scroll down and find previous episodes that way. There's links to any of the news items discussed in the episode, as well as any of the tip or special segment items, such as the interview with Cora Vizcarra that we had earlier in this episode. I do want to thank all of you for checking in with me and keeping up with me. So if you haven't checked in yet, haven't sent me an email or a comment or a suggestion, or just letting me know how things are going and what you're doing in your nursing practice, or perhaps you're a student, what you aspire to do in your nursing practice, get in touch with me. I love to hear from you, and it helps me prepare and see what direction a future episode might go in. So send me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from each and every one of you, and I strive to send and reply back to each and every email. It might take me a couple of days, but I will get back in touch with you. Of course, you can also reach me via Twitter and Facebook. Just find me under the handle PodMedic, PODMEDIC. So twitter.com/podmedic, facebook.com/podmedic. And you can always contact me and the other loyal fans of The Nursing Show. If you're not already a fan of our fan page over on Facebook, head over to facebook.com/nursingshow and click the like button right there at the top of the page, and things that I share only with the fans will then get to you via Facebook, and you can comment back there and interact with the other fans of The Nursing Show. I do want to remind you that there will be some upcoming events and travels that I'll be doing. I'm actually going to be heading out to Blog World coming up in the coming week, and we'll be in Las Vegas for that event. And I do want to thank the Discover Nursing Campaign for Nursing's Future from Johnson & Johnson. They are hosting the blogger track for healthcare bloggers out there. And they're also holding a special nursing breakfast. So that's going to be on Friday morning. So I will be filling you all in on the details of that in a future episode. But I'm looking forward to meeting other nurse bloggers face-to-face. A lot of times we've conversed with each other via email and Skype conversations, but this will be a lot of fun to actually meet some of these very talented bloggers right over there face-to-face in Las Vegas. So I'm looking forward to that. If you're in the Vegas area and you want to try to catch up with me, I'll try to make some time and we can catch up for a cup of coffee or a soda or something. So if you want to do that, send me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com and I will try to catch up with you. Maybe we can catch up with each other. I'll be getting in late Wednesday night and we'll be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So if you want to catch up, maybe we can catch up with each other one of those days. I'll be down at the Mandalay Bay Hotel or Conference Center or whatever it is. They're all casinos, I guess. But anyway, look forward to hearing from each and every one of you in the coming weeks, whatever the reason. So please follow up and get in touch with me here on the show. Let's see here what I'm going to be ending up this week's episode with. I forgot which song I was going to be including. And it looks like we're going to be playing a song by Laura Clapp called Not Responsible. We've played her music here recently in the past. It's one of my favorite songs of hers. So check out the link in the show notes. And if you like what you hear, purchase her songs over in iTunes. There's a button there you can click and check out all of her music in iTunes and maybe pick up one or two of her songs and thank her for sharing her great music with you and the other podcast listeners that she shares with via her podcast Safe Music. That's it for me. I am Jamie Davis. I'll be back again next week on Friday with another episode here of The Nursing Show. And in the meantime, I want to remind each and every one of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Wrap your guilt around me when you don't get your way. And you bleed all this blame. Clean your cut, wrap it up, take care of your own pain. 'Cause it's you, not me, who's gonna set you free. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the time. And it's me, not you, that ends up feeling used. bruised and I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not responsible. Why can't you let it go? Oh, yeah. 'Cause all that you're crying about happened 2 years ago or more. You hit rock bottom, now you're pacing its floor. But what I'm talking about is climbing out. Well, no one's help but your own. 'Cause it's you, not me, who's gonna set you free. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the time. And it's me, not you, that ends up feeling used. And I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not responsible. Grow some backbone, stand up for yourself. 'Cause I ain't taking no more, and neither is no one else. Oh, 'cause it's you, not me, who's gonna set you free. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the time. And it's me, not you, that ends up feeling. And I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not so sorry. So it's you, not me, who's gonna set you free. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the time. And it's me, not you, that ends up feeling used. And I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not. I'm so sorry. Oh, oh, I'm so sorry, baby, but I'm not. Sorry, so sorry, baby, but I'm not. Sorry, baby, but I'm not responsible.